Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Jeff and Susan. Welcome back to the third episode of Catalyst Autism. Tonight, we're kind of winging it a little bit. We got a special guest, however, that we didn't plan on until about 11 minutes ago. My friend Jessica is going to join us in just a moment. But how you doing, Susan?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad. I've been worse. Had worse days. We had actually a plan for tonight's episode, and it was so planned and so well done. And actually, Susan set up the structure for it, and we had a guest, and due to time restraints, we could not get it done. So we went to our actual first person we wanted to have, which was our friend Jessica. We should have never went with the second guest we wanted to have. Just went to the first, but so now we have Jessica on the line. Jessica, are you there?
Hey, hi guys. I'm good.
How are you doing?
Good.
How are you?
So, I don't know if, can you hear me well or no?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good. So it's great to be a plan B. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Susan.
No, I said you were the first plan.
Right.
But we went with the second one, yes. No, you are not plan B. No, we actually had a really cool idea for this podcast, and it was and that's not saying this is not going to be a good podcast, but we had a really cool, actually, Susan had a really good idea for this podcast, and we thought it was going to go really well, and everything was kind of planned out, but just the timing didn't work, and so it all fell through the last second, and you, my new second favorite person, came through and decided to join us.
Yeah, good save there.
You did. He came in at the last second and said, I will come in and wreck your podcast for you. So I do appreciate that. But you were on when I had the old podcast.
Yeah, I was.
Autistic Adventures podcast. So you're not new to this. This is just a phone call to you.
Yep.
You were actually an admin for... I don't even know, are you still on admin for that page? I haven't even checked that page. It's so long.
I think we might have got hacked. And no, I'm kidding. I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure I am. I much took me off of there.
I have no idea. I haven't been to that page in so long. If nobody understands what I'm talking about, we used to have a podcast called Autistic Adventures. Autistic Adventures podcast, and it was all about autism only. And we actually had, I think we ended up with 11, we did 10 episodes and ended up with 11,000 downloads. Last I looked, I don't know if it's still, I still every once in a while get the notification that someone visited the page or liked the page, but I still don't know, look. Because it's been a couple of years, but last time I looked, I mean, we averaged 1,000 downloads per podcast, which is actually really good. And our highest point, I think it was the one that was education one, about education, the first education one we did, when we discussed IEPs and how to go through them, and we had a school psychologist on. I think we had 850 live listens and 26 calls. for that one. So
oh, wow.
It actually went really well. But at the time, I was promoting the podcast. I was advertising mm-hmm. it. I had it on iTunes. This one, I haven't even put on iTunes yet or Stitcher or anything else. Because I want to get a couple in the bank first and then, you know, maybe try to advertise for it. I already have a page for it, but haven't advertised that either. Haven't got a logo. Haven't done much of anything. Because we have a new baby and I don't have time.
Yeah, sure so, you do. Come on.
Yes, tons of time. Yes. In between cries, we have plenty of time. And Susan's the artistic one to let me know what we need to do. I'm just the do-it one. So, you know, I try to be asleep, but she's awake, and she's asleep, and I'm awake, so.
That's good.
We're not able to come together. But we will. We will get it up and running very soon. So what did you want to talk about tonight, Jessica? I know you have a million different things, and every single thing except for maybe two we disagree on. So, but not in a bad way.
Oh, boy.
But I'm putting you on the spot. No, but I have so much respect for you and your husband, Michael. You guys are incredible people. And unfortunately, this podcast isn't sponsored by Zillow, even though you sold your house. I don't know if you sold all the stuff inside that you were trying to sell. If I had yardsale.com that was begging me to sponsor them, I'd let you sell all your stuff on the podcast, but I don't know how that would work.
You can hear the frogs.
You can hear the, I told you you're going to hear frogs.
I hear
told
frogs.
You you're going
to
hear frogs.
It's so funny to me.
I told you there are huge frogs up by our pool. We got a pool in the back. It's not open yet because it's not the season in New Jersey where we are located. And we have very large man-sized frogs in the backyard. And we unfortunately don't have cats that try to eat them. So I told you there was going to be frogs. You said you may hear my son splash in the pool or whatever. No, I told you, you're going to hear frogs. Because we have frogs.
Okay, sorry. I was totally dying just now. Like, on your podcast. I was just dying on your podcast. I apologize. I had to, like, mute you.
No.
My eyes are super watering and, like, I was dying laughing, and then it made me choke, and then, wow, okay, so I didn't even hear any of that, so I really hope you trash-talked me real good just now.
Oh, I did. I called your name, and I would never call anybody else ever in my life.
Good. Ah,
so,
sorry about that. All right. So, I'm sorry, what are we talking about?
What do you want to talk about? What is your... You sent me a couple links, and I did.
Yeah,
I watched
okay,
the videos.
So, but the thing is, it's probably more to do with, like, the actual, like, screaming and disorder deal than it is about autism, because not every kid that has this disorder is going to be diagnosed with autism. Like,
right.
Like, this is kind of rare. So, basically, what's been happening kind of since Micah was, how old was he? Probably 2.5 when... We found out that he had hypothyroidism, and basically we were told that it was just something that he just got, like that he acquired it, like over the 2.5 years of his life, and that all the symptoms that he had that were related to that were all kind of like, I don't know, like they could have been isolated in nature,
like a kid that has like GERD, like a lot of kids have GERD, a lot of kids have spit up, right? They have like acid reflux. A lot of kids have growing problems. A lot of kids have jaundice. I mean, all the things that are symptoms of this disorder that he has, like basically they could all be isolated medical conditions. So nobody really thought of it being kind of all collective and being something going on with him until we found out that he had hypothyroidism. We're like, oh, okay, well, now we have given him a replacement hormone that most kids, they have enough of, so it doesn't do anything. You know, like they don't have these isolated medical problems because of this. Do you see what I mean? So we started giving him medicine, and all of a sudden his acid reflux went away. Like the things, all like the jaundice went away. All the things that were medical about this went away, including, which is really weird, is eye contact that kids with autism have sometimes a hard time with. It came back, and that's weird because we were told it was autism, just autism. Is what is actually what we were told, like initially. And so he starts treatment, and oh wow, he was like, I want to say 3.5 when we found out we were pregnant with Eli. And Eli, he seemed, you know, like Micah, like normal, right? When he's born, like as far as like medical, like health wise, pretty healthy.
Right.
But our doctor's like, well, you have a child with hypothyroidism, and it's very unlikely that you're going to have another child with this because this is like a 1 in 10,000 thing that your kid is born without a functioning thyroid. Okay. So we're like, okay, you know, so we're like, well, then Eli's probably not going to have it. But just in case, let's make sure. Our doctor was really good about making sure that he was screened and then rescreened. They don't do that in Michigan. They actually just screen one time, and then they tell you yes or no, and they don't even give you a value or anything. They just say you're good or you're bad, and that's it. And so with Eli, we got a little bit more follow-up. And then within 6 weeks, Eli, we got his diagnosis of congenital hypothyroidism, and he started treatment, like, immediately. I mean, it's not a like something that would happen every single time, but in our case with Micah, his like basically the science of it is that when you don't have enough thyroid hormone, your body doesn't grow, including your brain, including your bones. We had Micah's bone age tested. He was about 2.5 years delayed in bone age. The left side of his brain didn't grow as appropriately. So the left side of your brain that controls speech language, there's things on that side of the brain that are necessary to speak, to communicate, to have short-term memory. There's like all these things that didn't grow there. So what do we know about autism? We know it's the diagnosis that you have to have what, like 3 things, right?
Right.
To be called autistic, the doctors like to say.
Two to five, I think.
So if you have it,
three out of five.
So. Yeah. So basically, Micah, his diagnosis of autism is the direct result of being untreated for hypothyroidism. But the thing is, he could have that. I mean, if like I look at Eli every day and I'm like, you know what? Eli could certainly be autistic. You know what I mean? He could be. He's not.
Right.
He's neurotypical. He's actually kind of annoying neurotypical. Like, super, like, I don't even know how to explain it. But he also has been treated for his condition that's never going to go away. It's genetic. Like, he'll always have to take medicine for this condition, for this metabolic disorder. And so, Micah, but the difference between the two of them is one was treated and one wasn't. And now here we are, and they're about the same height, and Micah's 8, and Eli's going to be 5, and Eli's talking. He was ahead of his milestones. He never had any signs of autism. He still doesn't. And in that, I'm talking the signs of autism that the textbook says, okay, guys? Because we know that obviously they don't know like, everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
so, I mean, we know
let
that.
Me,
obviously,
let me,
everyone's different.
Let me break up 2 things. I'm going to ask you some questions, but first, so I do my due diligence. Do you want to tell people about your Facebook page in case people want to find you guys?
Oh, yeah. So, like, we're at Micah Boy Genius on Facebook, and you can find us there. It's all one word, Micah Boy Genius, and you can find out information about what we're doing to help newborn screening so that basically the babies that are being tested right now are going to be tested uniformly. So that way, you know, like basically what we're doing is I've been helping at least in, I don't want to really call it a fight. It's just, it's because it's like basic human right, I think, to be healthy and to like not, you know, it's not something that should be a fight. But like basically Micah was born in Michigan, right? And so like if you would have been born in Indiana or Ohio or Wisconsin, like any place like that's around Michigan, he would have been tested. Like he would have been, his number that he had for this disorder that he has actually would have been marked as positive, and then he would have received treatment like his brother. But because his number was only like three notches from the number that Michigan decided they were going to use for a normal, which is pretty terrible because it's like three times what a normal child, according to like American Academy of Pediatrics, should have. But they chose to use that because they want to catch the kids that are like severe, because, you know, those kids that are severe, it's not like it's going to be obvious that they're severe when they're born. But I'm not a doctor, so I don't know. Like, I guess I can't really comment on that. But according to all the other doctors and scientists that I've spoke with, they said there was no excuse for him to be missed, that he should have been caught, and that his diagnosis of autism was actually, from the people that I've talked to in that field and in neuroscience, they said that that's actually probably it's going to be the best diagnosis to give him so that he will get the best services. And yeah, he may not fit the mold for like what you typically hear about an autistic kid, but you know what? No kid really does that has autism. So, you know, like this is a dual diagnosis. And could he have been autistic if they would have caught it? Sure. I think it's possible. It's just really difficult when you have another child that has the same set of genes, you know, like the same, like mom and dad and everything. And in fact, I was older when I had this child. You know, they say like the older you get, that's like a risk factor, whatever. Breathing is a risk factor for autism, apparently. So I'm just saying, like, I feel like we have all of these things that the could have, would have type thing. And like the only difference there, you know, that's scientifically appropriate, I guess you could say, because there's another difference, but we won't go there because we'd be here all night, wouldn't we, Jeff? there's another difference, but it's the only reason why there is another difference is because of this metabolic disorder, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, there, like if not for this, then there probably wouldn't even be that other difference, if that makes sense.
Well, because you're throwing out a lot of medical terms, but let's break it down. So hypo. Thyroidism means that the thyroid is not working properly, and hyperthyroidism means that it's working overtime, that it's doing too much.
No, it's actually hypo is the lack of, right? So hypo, it's H-Y-P-O, that's like lacking or low.
Yeah.
Hyper would be the opposite. Right. The hyper would be the opposite.
Right.
It'd be extra. Right. Exactly.
Now, is it possible, have they done tests on hyperthyroidism to come to the same results?
And autism, you mean?
Yes.
Or what? No, because see,
yes.
this is the thing. I don't know, because I don't go and like research that piece, because I focus more on the hypo. But I do know this. I know that with hyper, the kid's growth isn't affected like hypo, if that makes sense. Like a kid with hyperthyroidism isn't going to have the growth problems that Micah has. Like they aren't going to have okay, so like I said, I'm not a doctor, but like I know a lot of this stuff because I've done a lot of research and talked to actual like people like that. This is what they do for a living. And it's not like Dr. Google. It's so like hyperthyroidism, when you have too much, can cause like over like development or like early puberty or like, okay, so like your thyroid hormone is a permissive, like it's a permissive hormone where, I don't know how to explain this, but like your brain, your hypothalamus, and
right.
your thyroid, they all like talk to each other, okay? And so like when you have too much of something, it tells the gland or the brain or wherever like to produce another hormone to affect that. I don't explain. It's like a big circle. Does that make sense? Like a cycle almost. Like so if you have hyperthyroidism, you're spitting, your thyroid gland is saying, hey, I am going to throw out all this stuff, like all these hormones. And so then
right.
what happens is your pituitary gland, your hypothalamus, like, so your pituitary gland is in your brain, it's going to be like, oh, hey, I guess I don't have to produce a bunch of TSH to tell the thyroid to do stuff because, like, it's already doing it. So then you have, like, this super low amount of this TSH hormone being kicked out of your brain, your pituitary gland. I'm saying brain, but you guys understand what I mean? Like, it's a gland
yeah.
that's in your brain, so I'm not – okay. So it's like a big cycle. And then you have these other hormones that are growth hormones that are stupid too. Like, we have all these weird things going on in our brains and our bodies. And so, like, Micah's super short and little because he wasn't getting, like, enough thyroid hormone – his brain was like kind of going overtime on the TSH, which is like thyroid stimulating hormone. And then that hormone was telling his growth hormone, his IGF-1 growth hormone, it was saying, hey, just take a nap for a minute. Like, you're good.
Right.
Like, we're good. We're just going to kick this stuff out. You just take a nap for a minute. And because of that, like, when he would sleep, he was producing growth hormone. But, like, during the day, nada. Like, and you hear, like,
right.
people, have you ever heard anyone tell you, like, to go get your sleep so you'll grow, like, when you're little? Did anybody ever tell you that?
No.
Because I did. Like, people told me that all the time. They'd be like, you got to sleep because then you won't grow if you don't sleep. Well, that's kind of true because.
Oh,
then,
yeah, I'm sorry.
That's the only time.
I heard it wrong.
Yeah. Because
yeah.
your
yeah,
brain, like, releases growth hormone during, like, when you're sleeping, basically. And so we did, like, a whole growth, like, a hormone test on him. And so, like, while he was awake, they gave him all of this stuff to, like, make him, like, I don't know, drugs or whatever it is that they give you, to make him produce this hormone, this growth hormone. And his body was like, nope, I'm awake. And then as soon as he passed out, like, as soon as they put him down, like, put him down to sleep, he all of a sudden started producing growth hormone. So anyhow, there's all these, like, things that your brain and your body have, like, hormones and that they talk to each other, and when you don't have enough of one, your body just kind of does what it needs to do, if that makes sense, to try to regulate that on its own. But some kids, they need to have help by a replacement hormone. Does that make sense? Oh, God. That sounded terrible, but that's...
No, I understand what you're saying.
That's my explanation for it.
I read the things that you sent me, and mostly it was... and we've had this discussion for... I don't know, 4 years, 5 years,
mm-hmm.
maybe, off and on. But I read what you sent me, and basically it was just advocacy for, you know, more early intervention type of treatment, or not even treatment, but more early intervention type of test for different
right.
things. So that's kind of what you're more advocating for, is the test aspect of it, to find out, you know, if there is a correlation between, because obviously there can't be, you know, a connection between the two, because not everybody on the spectrum has one thing or the other. I mean, the only thing that we can
do. Sure. No, you're absolutely right.
Oxygen. I mean, oxygen is the only connection between autism and humans. You know, aside from that, there really isn't anything that is a causational type of thing. But, so, what you're saying is you think there should be more testing, because every state, as you said, does things differently. So you're saying you think there should be advocacy on the federal level, that there should be more of a standardized type of test four different things, like there is, you know, they have the MBO, they have things like that, which, I mean, of course, you can always not have if you choose not to have that type of testing. There's the Harmony testing where they do with the blood. There's different types of testings they can do. So you think it should be more standardized as opposed to state-specific to where, you know, one state tests for one thing, another state kind of misses it or doesn't look at it, that type of thing?
Well, I think what should happen is right now they have, I believe, at least 35 disorders that every state right now tests for, okay? I think that they should at least have a standard in what threshold they use for cutoffs to prevent actual cases where the intellectual disability or physical disability was caused by or could be caused by this metabolic disorder that I mean, it's there's no if, there's it will happen. Like, if you don't treat some, and it's not just hypothyroidism, there's other disorders, you know, there's 34 other disorders on there that, I mean, I could like cry and say, oh, this is terrible, this happened to my son, but some of these kids are dying, like dead. Like, I think that I prefer my nonverbal child over a dead child, right? Like, I don't want my kid to be dead. And this is kind of like, it's what sucks is like, it's not just this, like, it's like there's all these other like disorders that we're in the United States of America. You'd think that we would be able to have some kind of standard testing for these where every kid, and you know what, if the parent's stupid, I'm not trying to say they're stupid, okay, I'm just trying to say if they make a decision and they don't want to do this test at all, which is like most people don't do that, but if they do, whatever, but I feel like that's kind of their choice. But like most people do have the newborn screen where they prick the heel of their child, put it on the blood spot, right, send it in. I feel like why should it be different for one kid who lives in like Michigan than a kid who lives in like Illinois, you know? And so one kid gets attention and one kid doesn't, and they know it. That's what irritates me, is like they know that this disorder, at least I'm just speaking from like the CH standpoint. They know what it can do to children when they're not treated. They know that science shows that if you're not treated for this disorder and you have a lack of thyroid hormone, this is how the brain is going to develop, period. There's actual, like, objective document, like, medical documentation. This isn't, like,
is
it may
reviewed?
Happen. Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay, because you know that's my favorite
question.
I'm telling
you, it has nothing to do with autism.
It
has to do with the way that the brain develops. Yes, sir.
Right.
This is they added congenital hypothyroidism to the list of disorders on a newborn screening, because if you do not have enough thyroid hormone, the direct result of that, I'm not saying is autism, is the brain development isn't as if it were if you had enough thyroid hormone. Does that make sense?
Yes. Now, question. Why?
So, like I'm saying, like, what if Micah didn't have
autism?
When
does that,
like,
when does that cross
like, we know
line?
It.
At what part of development does that cross the line? Let's say, you know, if
like
you,
at what part
if you
of
do
development?
The, yeah, if you do the, like you said, after birth, if you do the testing and you find out that hypothyroidism is something that the child has, are you saying that they could become autistic, but if they get proper treatment, they won't? Or
no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying
that
they have a...
At that point? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying, like, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if they aren't treated, then 100% of the time they will have brain development issues. So, like,
okay,
what I'm saying about that is you're going to have how do you say it in, like, a way without sounding, like, rude? Because I feel like because not all people with autism obviously have this disorder, like my son, like, it's hard to say it in a way without sounding like
it's a bad thing. You understand what I'm saying? But, like, for Micah,
right.
it's a bad thing. Like, it sucks that part of his brain didn't grow. Like, I'm sorry, but that's not normal, and I'm not a doctor. Like, that's not normal. But, like, let's say,
right.
like, Eli, he would have been given the chance to grow his brain, normal development, or atypical, like, not or not atypical development, but, like, actual, like, this is how every other baby gets to, you know, develop because they have enough hormone. What if? Okay, we could say, like, the what if on him. But then what if he still displayed signs of autism and he was autistic? Okay, I'll take that, right? Like, there's nothing I could have done, right? There's nothing anyone could have done. But it's, like, kind of, like, terrible to even, like, a kid who would be on the spectrum anyway to just say, well, okay, so they're treated and they won't have it. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that they're going to have a better chance of, like, being on the spectrum if they're not treated, and it's going to be bad. It's not going to – I mean, I'm bad as in, like, taking away from their like, actual ability to speak, their ability to toilet themselves, like, things that I'm pretty sure Michael would love to be able to do, but I don't know. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, that makes sense. Like, I just – it's hard because I don't know. Like, I'm not in his brain, so – but, I mean
– I'm still, and again, I've studied a lot of what you told me, because, you know, I asked for it and you gave it to me. You gave me some studies. I'm still geared towards the genetic component, just
yeah.
from what I've read and what I've seen. And
okay.
I'm not saying that there can't be other components as part of it, because I don't think there's many doctors that would say, you know, here's a definitive lie and we're drawing it in the sand and this is it. So I don't know. You know, as far as I know, there's a perfect example. You know, when you're born, your neuron connections are in the billions. There are many, many you'll never use. And there was
sure.
there was a little girl who, I think this was in England, I believe in the 60s or
mm-hmm.
70s, that was locked in the basement. And she never heard speech. She had horrible things happen to her. She never learned speech at all. And speech, neurons in your brain connect speech to well, there's neurons in your brain that connect how speech works and how communication works.
Sure.
And if they're not used, they die. And once they die, and she actually, I think she was found at 8 or 9 years old, and she was nonverbal because she had never heard words. And to this day, she's still unable to communicate. In the form of words, just because those neurons were not used, so they died off. They're specific
mm-hmm.
ones used for specific things. And again, I think it's in the billions, actually, of neuron connectors that you have when you're born, and they each slowly die off. That's why they try to get, that's why all the toys for kids have bright colors, and they have sounds, and they have a bunch of different things, because they don't want those neurons to disconnect. They don't want to die off. They want to, you know, they want
mm-hmm.
to entice your brain to activate everything that it possibly can. But, so, I mean, is it possible? Absolutely. I mean, you're not talking about broccoli causes autism, so I'm not going to challenge you on a horrible sense in that way, but I still do
right.
think there's a genetic component to it, which you did say that you thought there was, you know, a genetic or a potential genetic component to it as well.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, obviously, Michael, I mean, my husband, he's,
right.
you know, yeah, so obviously, but we just, well, our whole gripe with the whole newborn screening is that like, we'll never know. I mean, we look at Eli and we see he's healthy and whatnot, but we'll never know, you know, would we have just like Micah or like a Michael Jr.? Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, we'll never know.
Right.
Because he was kind of like, yeah, what a terrible thing. And like, it's, I don't know.
But never know.
Yeah,
should
so,
never bring you to a conclusion. Just remember that.
Right. Right.
And speaking of never knowing and never conclusions, do you want to talk about Jesus now?
If you want, I don't care.
30 minutes. Because I know, once again, I love you to death. I love your husband to death. I think you guys are great people. We're on polar opposites of belief structures as this season. And I see your posts all the time about, you know, being at church and different things, and a lot of them sound absolutely wonderful, and I'm not degrading them or dismissing them by any means. How do you want to approach this? Do you want me to ask you questions, or do you want
and answer for you?
What's that?
I said, do you want me to have Michael come and help me answer for you, too? Get a little bit, someone who is on the spectrum that won't answer. We did.
I'd love to have him around.
Yeah, well, I'm on the news right. Look, I'm on the news right now, Jeff. That's what I just told Trey. He's like, what? I don't. He's doing something right now, so he probably can't come. But yeah, I don't care. Ask me whatever you want to ask me. It doesn't matter.
My first question, and again, because this podcast is based on wanting to talk about autism and atheism, and we still need to do our show. We're still working on how to pack it together in the right way to get people that have done studies on this and the connection between autism and atheism. But, you know, I try to, we try to do our best to divide it up as much as we can, although, you know, the atheism side ends up taking a little bit of precedence in a sense. Unfortunately, because we haven't had many people like you to come in and talk about things as far as autism. But I guess my first question to you in that sense is, what would be, and this would be the best starting point, I think, would what would be your definition of the word faith?
Okay. My definition of the word faith. That's a good question.
Because I assume you have it, and you believe in it, and you stand by it. But what would be your definition of it?
Well, it's not going to be like a Bible or textbook definition for you, though. I'll tell you that. So
no,
if that's
your,
what you wanted
no,
for me.
No, I'm
just,
fine with
your
definition.
I mean, it's belief in something that you can't necessarily see or touch, you know? Like, faith that I'm hoping that I'll get a paycheck on Friday. Like, I know that'll happen, right? What if it doesn't? Like, that's what I mean. Like, it's
But do you have faith you get a paycheck on Friday, or is it that you've always gotten a paycheck on Friday, so you just believe you'll get a paycheck on Friday because you always have, just like the sunrise.
Well, yeah, that's a good point, though. That is a good point. yeah, I mean, it's a belief in something really that you can't see, and you can't really. It's hard to explain. For me, it's hard to explain. I mean, I guess I'd be okay with being wrong. Like, it's to me, I feel like I'm not, how do I explain it? Like, I guess the belief in something that is, how do I even say it? With, like, cause I feel like it sounds like crappy when like people say this like textbook definition of something that you really can't explain. Like, I think it's okay not to be able to explain it. Like, I know you don't think so because you want to explain everything. But
no,
like,
I absolutely completely do. I absolutely completely do.
Like, you can't. There's a lot of stuff you can't
explain,
like love. You know, like a lot of stuff.
Right, but I do think love can actually be explained scientifically. I do believe emotions can be explained scientifically. I do believe there's
so love is an emotion, like merely an emotion.
Yeah.
Well, then what if
actually,
what if you feel bad about like one day, like you don't feel like so like do you like fall in and out of love or what?
Actually, I believe the word emotion would be more of a term that we use as an explanation.
Okay.
But love is, there is an actual chemical reaction in your brain when you see, I mean, there's been so many hundreds of neurological tests when it comes to different things, when it comes to pain.
Are they peer-reviewed studies?
Yes, they absolutely are. Look up Sam Harris when it comes to some of this stuff. He can point you in the right direction. But there are studies that are done to show, you know, the chemical reactions in the brain. And just like with different disorders, you know, you can look at a brain that's neurotypical. You can look at a brain that has PTSD. You can look at a brain that has, but that's bipolar. And you can see the difference.
Mm-hmm.
There
mm-hmm.
are different studies done, and you can see the differences. You know, when it comes to the release of endorphins and things of that in your brain, it's not voluntary. Those things happen during certain specific periods of times or for certain specific things. And I think that, yes, things like love and whatever release when there's something in front of you or something that causes them to release. So I do think it's measurable. I don't think love's measurable in the sense of in a scale, but I do think that you can take pictures while doing your brain scan. You can take photographs and show people which they've done, you know, people that they don't know, photographs of people they don't know, and they have a relatively
mm-hmm.
binary reaction, and then they show somebody that they know or a mate or a family member, and then you do see parts of the brains light up. You do see a reaction,
mm-hmm.
a chemical reaction in the brain. And I think that's
mm-hmm.
what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not tangible.
But blind people can love people, right? I just want to make sure that we're clear.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Definitely. Absolutely.
I totally give you a hard time, Jeff. Like, totally
No, and that's a great question because there was actually, I just read it today. There was an article in regards to blind people and love, and I cannot, or I'm sorry, blind people and sexual orientation.
Okay.
And I cannot remember. There was something really important in there that kind of explained other things, but because, you know, sexual orientation, typically people look at it as, you know, the attraction you have to somebody. Well, if you're
right.
if you can't see the people, how do you
yep.
know if you're attracted to the opposite sex or not? So it was a very
yep.
great article that was written, and there were some studies behind it. They were not peer-reviewed studies. They were just preliminary studies, but they were very
right.
well done, and they were very good. But
oh, if you find those, can you send those to me? Because that would be really awesome to like share with people.
Yeah, it popped
people.
Up. It popped up on my wall today. I'll see if I can find them. But yeah, it was in regards to blind people and sexual orientation, just due to you know, them not having the site, but there was also, they talked about touch, feel, sound, and smell actually being very important aspects of it as well. So because you lose one sense doesn't mean you lose all of them. So, you know, yes, they can't see the opposite sex, but there are certain senses that were heightened during these tests. Just being in the same room with an opposite sex person that they didn't know were the opposite sex. There were still heightened arousals and things of that sort. And then sound was one of the big parts of it because, you know, when they heard the voices, they were more comforted or felt more comfortable around a masculine voice or around a more female voice. So it was very interesting, again, a very interesting article. There was a couple different studies. I don't remember what kind of conclusion they came to, which I don't think they really came to a conclusion. It was more of just a, here's what we've, you know, looked at so far. But,
okay.
I'll give you how I define faith and then tell me what you think.
Okay.
I'll just use basically the biblical term, or the biblical sense of, you know, things that you believe that are unseen and things that are unknown. For the most part.
Yeah.
And I know that the Bible aspect comes into, or the actual verse, which I can't quote offhand, which I'm surprised because I usually can. But, Susan, do you have a definition of faith that differs from those?
I'm sorry, totally lost you just now. Do you guys hear me right now?
No, you're clear. Yes.
Okay,
yes,
go ahead.
Can.
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry, I think I can hear you now.
I don't think my definition differs. I think my definition is the belief in something that you can't see or feel.
So just non-tangible or farther than that?
No, I would say non-tangible.
Now, do you mean non-tangible or do you mean non-measurable? Because, I mean, like air. Air is non-tangible in the sense of you can't see it. I mean, in a sense, you can feel it,
well,
I guess.
Have faith,
but
there's oxygen.
That's measurable. So you can actually measure if there's oxygen in the air. There's ways to measure those things. So I don't want to quote the Bible wrong, but I thought they may have said things unmeasured, but I could be wrong. But I know
what?
It said things
you might have said what?
Heard. The Bible made it said something about unmeasured, but I could be wrong.
Well, the definition of faith in the Bible is a substance, right? Doesn't it say that faith is what? You know what it says, Jeff, Mr. Bible. I know you know what it says.
Yes, for whatever reason,
it's the substance for things that are hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. That's what the Bible's definition
right.
is.
Right. That's okay.
Right.
That's yeah.
Okay.
So we're to a absolute non-tangible then, without question, because something hoped for could be measurable. Something unseen could be measurable. But they're not talking about things that can be measured because it's faith. Now, it also in the Bible says faith is a virtue, which means it's important. It's a great thing to have. I find it being the exact opposite. And I think kind of my question to believers is why? That's what I don't understand is the why question. And I don't know if you can explain it because I know it's personal. You have anecdotal reasons. But I don't
awesome.
Understand.
That's a super sweet insult. I love it.
No, it's not an insult at all. I mean, like, if you felt something or you had something happen to you personally that gave you a solidified belief, I would never tell you that never happened. But that would still be anecdotal, which means it only happened to you. So that's not, it's not to, not able to convince me of something because it happened to you. Like, hey, you know, my car rolled over my favorite cookie and I prayed and the car rolled forward by itself and no one touched it and no one was around it and there's no way on earth the car could have moved to get off of my cookie except for the fact that I prayed. That would be evidence to you because you saw that happen. But to me, that would be anecdotal because that's your experience. And that's not saying that it's not true, and it's not saying it didn't happen, but it's saying it's anecdotal, which just means it's your experience, it's your personal experience, or someone else's personal experience
right.
that you're relaying. So it's in no way am I knocking people's anecdotal feelings and beliefs because, you know, I grew up a Christian. And I was an evangelical Christian, so I went to many religious, I went to church all the time, but I went to, you know, revivals and things like that. And there was times that I would have, you know, this emotional feeling or this, you know, feeling inside that I attributed to, you know, God, the Holy Ghost, Jesus, or whatever. And that was my personal feeling. However, I've also experienced those things during other times, you know, like concerts or watching certain movies or doing certain things in life, watching the kids play and stuff like that, that I've gotten the same amount of joy out of and things like that, that I can look at those and go, well, maybe that wasn't anything spiritual. Maybe it was just, you know, a rise in my endorphin levels or things like that that made me feel that way. And so in that sense, that's why I'm saying anecdotal, because, you know, I don't want to take one person says, you know, I woke up and I saw God standing in front of me and he told me this. Well, I'm not going to believe you. You're going to have to prove to me somehow that it actually happened, but I'm also not going to call you a liar. I'm not going to say you lied, but I'm not going to say that's going to convince me. So, no, I didn't mean any disrespect by using the word or term anecdote, by any means.
It's okay. It's all right. 3 hours later.
But I was just trying to clear it up because I don't want people to think that, you know, anecdotal evidence isn't respected or respectable. So it's not always respected, but not respectable. But it's, you know, the Russell Bertrand's teapot, the celestial teapot. You know, there's a teapot, you know, floating on the backside of Mars and can't see it with a telescope. But it's there. It's there, and I can even say I put it there, or NASA put it there, and there's someone there that told me that they put it there, but you can't see it. Now, do you believe that it's there? I mean, you're going to kind of say, well, I need a little bit more evidence than that. And if I showed you a book that said, well, here's a book from NASA that shows exactly how they launched it, the size of the teapot, what it looked like, I would expect you to say, all right, well, how do we see that it's actually there? And if I keep telling you I can't show it to you, well, then it becomes anecdotal. Even if I have 5,000 people working at NASA standing behind me saying, no, it's there, and we have a book, and we can show you exactly how we did it.
We have a book. We can show you.
Yep. But we can't show you what it looks like, or, you know, where it is exactly, or, you know, there's no telescopes that will ever see it. There's no satellites that will ever see it. You know, that's kind of the same type of thing that I think about when I think about the term of faith, is that,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Bible's true because the Bible says it's true. But that, to me, is just circular reasoning and doesn't do much good.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Well, how about I do this, though? How about I say this? I'll say that I... Either way, whatever, I mean, whatever you believe, I'll just say that I'll just keep on loving Jesus and loving people. You, Susan, anybody, it doesn't matter. I don't care what you believe, really. So I'll just keep doing that. And, like, if I'm wrong, and, like, then I'm wrong. But I feel like I just love people, and that's cool. Like, it's better than being a jerk, right? Like, I guess I could
absolutely.
Be a jerk and still be a Christian, though. So that would even be worse, right?
And you could be, a super incredible person and be an atheist too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's a lot of atheist foundations out there that do great work for people.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is, don't you want to believe things that are true and not believe in things that aren't true? I mean, I'm an atheist because it's a thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
God is a thing that people, you know, worship and people take as real. But there's no, I mean, we're probably both a Bigfootist and a Loch Ness Monsterist, but there's not words for them. Or a fairyist, or a leprechaun. There's not words for those because people don't believe in those. For the most part, I'm sure there's a few people that do. But for the most part, people don't believe in those. So they don't even have a word for it. And if someone says, I believe in, I don't believe in Bigfoot, no one treats them any differently. Everyone says, well, I don't believe in Bigfoot either. Or if they say, well, I don't believe in Bigfoot, there's usually not that much contention. But for some reason, there seems to be a lot of contention with people that say, I don't believe that a God exists. They typically get the short end of the stick. The study that was done in, I think, 2006, they put a bunch of different types of people, I guess you would say, for lack of a better term, into a list, and atheists were the least trusted people, below rapists. So it's an actual issue in the sense of, and I think that's why I talk about it, is because people like you and I, you're a believer. I have nothing but respect for you and your family. I'm an atheist. You have nothing but respect for me and my family. But yet there's a lot of people that look at people that believe differently and think completely or then think horribly about them or treat them like garbage or
whatever. What would you say to the people that their intention towards other people because they believe differently, or they have contention because other people believe differently? Like, how would you explain our friendship to someone from your church who is more fundamentalist or who is more inclined to disregard somebody that is a non-believer? How would you explain our friendship to them that it made sense?
I would just say that, like, how would I explain it? I would say that I serve a God that, if I really truly believe it, God made everyone, like, he's going to make someone that doesn't believe in him, and that's okay, and I'm going to still love him, and I'm going to send him, and if I'm wrong, like I told you, if I'm wrong, and I'm wrong for caring about people and loving people, well, then so be it, but I feel like, I mean, just in general, in life.
I don't think you can put the two together, because yes, you can be wrong about the existence of a God, but no, you can't be wrong about loving and caring about people. And yes, I could be wrong about there being a God, but no, I would also not be wrong about loving and caring about people, which I do the same. So I don't think those are mutually exclusive. I don't think that believing in a God automatically means you love and care about people. Just like I don't believe that being an atheist automatically believes that you don't love and care about people.
Sure.
I don't think any of those are mutually exclusive. I think they can all, you know, everybody can feel that same way without having a belief in a God.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, is it something, do you really truly believe it's something that you think deep down that is true? Or do you think it's, because you've kind of made it sound like a, if I'm wrong, then I'm wrong. But is it something that you think you have some sort of evidence of? Or do you just think that in for yourself only that you have the evidence?
Yeah, I'd say I have it for myself. I say I see it in my son. I see it in my family. I see it when I look outside, look at the trees, and I look at the animals and how they're taken care of. And I see a lot. There's evidence everywhere for me. I mean, I don't have, like, the Big Bang kind of face. Like, I don't know if I could believe that to be true. Like, maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's simple-minded of me, but yeah, I do believe, I believe in God and Jesus. Like, that's, and you know what, it's okay that you don't, but I think that a lot of argument between people who disagree, it's about, like, being right, and like you were saying, like, knowing the truth more than it is, like, what happens is, like, there's this divide, and, like, people start, like, not caring and loving people, regardless if they're an atheist or a Christian. Because I've seen a lot of, like, crappy Christians that are, like, really, like, not loving at all because you just believe a different, like, way than them, if that makes sense. Like, you don't necessarily believe every single thing that they believe, you know. And and then the same, like, with, like you were saying, like, how could you be friends with an atheist? You're a Christian. Well, and how would you be able to explain that? Like, why should I have to explain it to anybody anyways? Like,
well,
okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. I guess I just, I'm not, I don't know. I think you need to get somebody that's, like, super, like, judgy on here and ask them some questions. Because I just, I don't know. I'm not like that.
All of that's a catch-22, because, you know, if people are going to use the Bible, then in one sense it says, judge, lest ye not be judged, and then they said, another section says that righteous judgment is allowed, and then one part says that you need to kill non-believers, just like it does in the Quran. I know Christians don't like to
believe that there is actual calls from it or anything.
I believe that there's actually Abraham's, yeah, okay. But people don't, though. You're right. They don't.
Yeah, but there, I mean, there's actually, you know, and then there's also, you know, some of the Jesus side that is a, hey, let's take everybody in. Doesn't really matter. So, I mean, there's so many contradictions on how people should behave. So I think it, and to me, and Susan and I have had this conversation multiple times with my religious friends multiple times, is to me, religion comes down to the person, whatever they feel comfortable with. I don't think, and you may disagree with me, but I don't think that belief is voluntary. I've mentioned that many times. I can't believe in a God anymore that you can disbelieve in a God. Just at the snap of a finger, you can't just all of a sudden say, okay, I'm an atheist now. I don't believe there's a God, because deep down you will still believe there's a God. There has to be something that changes your mind. There has to be something evidential that shifts your thought process. And I can't believe in a God at this point in time, because there's been nothing, even though I used to, my...
So I'm getting kicked off. I just want to let you know that. I'm getting kicked off by my husband. He's saying that I need to go to bed. So you know what that means. I need to go to bed every night. So I got to go to bed. Okay. So,
well, tell my soul at least a hello.
And
thanks for calling in.
Okay. All right. Well, love you guys. I'll talk to you soon maybe, okay? Oh,
right,
I got a really nice message. I should screenshot this and show you what he said, but I'm not going to, because we were just talking about, I'm not going to say it on the podcast. Okay, all right. I'll see you later.
All right,
bye.
Take it easy. Bye.
Hello.
Hey, honey, how you doing?
Where's your second guest?
I think we're going to close it out earlier this time. We both fit up a lot today with the children. And I have a lot to soak in from all of that. I'm going to have to re-listen to a lot of that so I can grasp some of the things that were said, because it was all going so fast. I didn't get it all. I hate to say it, but I really didn't get it all. And again, there was a fucking raccoon up on the deck that was pissing me off and wouldn't leave me alone. But the cats got rid of him. And the cat's still alive. Yes, you asked me if the cat was okay. The cat's still up here. They went after each other, and I heard yelling and screaming, and now the cat's walking around like nothing happened. So.
Good deal.
But, yeah. That was, it was a good conversation, but it was, you know, the first, in the autism part, I wish I would ask a little bit more questions, because there's some of the things that I didn't really understand. And you understand a little bit more about that. I mean, do you want to talk about that at all, or no, or?
I think there's a heavy genetic component to both autism and thyroid problems. That's
correct.
Just my opinion, and that's my experience and what I've been told by my own doctors.
Right.
Because I have both.
Right. Well, and I have to agree with you. I mean, I definitely don't disagree with, you know, the testing and that being important for different tests, because, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, whatever, you know, you can start at zero tests for certain things and then you start to get up to more tests and more tests and more tests. as science catches up with things. Think, you know, amnio is, I think she said there was 36, or there was ways to test for 36 different things. I think there's way more than that, because I think the amnio itself, when it comes to chromosomal abnormalities, I mean, you're testing for quite a large array. And the Harmony test, you're testing for quite a large array of different abnormalities, different disorders, different things that could be there. I'm not sure where the 36 came from. I assume that it would be a lot higher than that. I would think it would be in the hundreds.
I would think
but
so.
I could be wrong. Yeah, because it just seems like, you know, especially with the Harmony test, when you do the blood test or the amnio, just that test alone, which is the same concept, you know, they consider it, or most people refer to it as the Down syndrome test, but really it's a chromosomal abnormality test. And just right there, there are so many different chromosomal abnormalities that they would be able to find from those tests that they wouldn't be testing for just 36 things. But I got confused as to where is, and that was, I guess, my biggest confusion is hypothyroidism. If it's detected at birth, if you do certain things, does that mean that God won't have autism? I mean, she answered it, but I was so confused that I can't even tell you exactly what the answers were, because I was trying to grasp what she was saying, because she talks very fast. She's wonderful, but she's talked about this stuff so many times with so many people that I think she is able to spit it out so quickly that it was hard for me to keep up with. But it's recorded, and my podcast catcher allows me to slow it down to half pace, so she'll sound like a man, but I'll still be able to understand every word that way. So maybe that's the way I'll do it, so I can understand completely. But do you have any last words for
our
one listener tonight? Or two listeners, maybe three? I do apologize to everybody. This is more of an unorganized. I mean, I loved having Jessica on. I think she's great. She's been a friend of ours for many years. She's been a huge help with a lot of projects that we've had going on in the past. But she honestly came on at the last minute. We were trying to set up something that fell through that we thought was going to be really fun. It was all Susan's idea, but it was going to be fun. It was going to be exciting. I was so looking forward to it, and it just didn't happen. So we're going to try to work on that for next week. But this will be our, and it's sad to say, it's an hour and 20 minutes in this, or close to an hour and 20 minutes. So this will be our shortest podcast thus far. Hour and 15 minutes. Our shortest podcast is an hour and 15 minutes. Most people don't even do over an hour. But add something. Come on. Give me something.
I will end it with a crying baby.
That's the way most nights end in the South. All right. Whoever happens to listen to this, which, you know, who knows? Maybe no one ever will, and these will be buried in an archive somewhere. And for whatever reason, our server is the only one that lasts through an atomic explosion. Thanks to Donald Trump, and when it gets inhabited, they're like aliens, and this is all they get to hear. So maybe they're not going to have the best idea of us as a species. So I blame myself for that. But other than that, thanks everyone for listening, and have a good night.
Good night.